Federal government shutdown day four. So how are you feeling about this impasse today? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You'll get a chance to sound off, tell us how you want this fixed, tell us how you are feeling about your congressmembers and the president during this edition of the Week in Review. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. While the federal government is partially shut down over Republican opposition to the Affordable Care Act, the healthcare marketplace opened for people to shop the exchanges this week, but lots of delays and lots of glitches there. We'll also talk about Wisconsin's governor thinking about changing the way public employees are insured in Wisconsin, and other top state and national stories of the week. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org if you'd like to join in this edition of the Week in Review. Let me welcome our guests. We are very happy to have with us, as always, two guests from different political viewpoints. Steve Prestigard is with us. He is a journalist and blogger at steveprestigard.com. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. Hope you're staying dry.
Well, yeah. Are you getting poured on right now?
Not at this second, but we had storms overnight. And, of course, you know, there's more than 200 high school football games taking place today and tomorrow. Probably more than 200 games are going to get wet, and many of them might end up with substantial delays because of lightning, from what we hear.
That's unusual,
but not unheard of.
Yeah, take care, because, yeah, there's a chance of potentially severe storms going on today for big parts of Wisconsin. We also should welcome Louis Fortas. He is with us. Louis is the editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee, former economics professor, and a former state legislator. Good morning, Louis.
Morning, Joy, and hi, Steve.
Morning.
All right.
I know we're going to be talking first about the shutdown. I don't know, though, Joy, if you don't realize that there's a huge benefit to this for Wisconsin Public Radio, besides listening to us, of course.
What is that?
Well, you know, one of the agencies that shut down is the Federal Communications Commission. So, you know, you can turn your transmitters up as high as they can possibly stand. 1 million watts, you know, you could have your signal broadcast across the entire world. People can hear WPR in their fillings and all that, and there's nothing the FCC can do about it.
Well, I didn't think of that. So, and you know what? I guess we're not going to get in any big trouble if people spout profanity during the hour either.
Well, I'd never suggest that. That would be irresponsible for me to suggest that. And you know, don't play George Carlin or anything like that, but...
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I guess some people are not laughing about the partial government shutdown. Louis Fortas, let's get your take first. How big of a deal is this, do you think, that the government is partially shut down right now?
Well, it's certainly an inconvenience to a lot of people, and if you're a federal employee, it's a major inconvenience. The real issue, I think, that everyone's concerned about is the whole debt ceiling coming up in a couple of weeks. And that one, you know, will affect world markets and the whole world economy. But the interesting thing is, poor Boehner, for Speaker Boehner, is in the middle of this. He has his Tea Party faction, which isn't that large relative to the whole caucus, but they are not willing to negotiate. And without them, he does not have a majority, so he would have to deal with the Democrats. And if he did that, so he's in a lose-lose situation. If he sticks with his Tea Party people, as he's doing right now, he is alienating the general public, and it's going to hurt Republicans. If he kind of does what I think he would really like to do, is just put a clean continuing resolution on the floor, it would pass because Democrats and moderate Republicans would get together and pass it. He will be challenged from his conservative side. And that's what he's more worried about. He's worried about staying Speaker.
Yeah, so do you agree with that assessment, Steve?
I'd say that is substantially correct. Of course, to quote the Windows PC people, that's a feature, not a bug. You know, essentially what and I'm not sure that Lewis is asking for this, but what he is suggesting is that Speaker Boehner would have to do something that none of his predecessors have done, because he does not have majority support in the Republican Party to pass a clean continuing resolution. Nancy Pelosi never put a vote up when she had less than majority support within her own party. I'm pretty sure Jim Wright didn't, and I'm absolutely positive that Tip O'Neill never did that either. So all of these people who are saying, well, Boehner needs to put up a clean CR and that would pass, that's not how the system works. The system is you have to first get the majority support of your own party, and to ask Boehner to do that is, I think, grotesquely unrealistic. It's good that Lewis specifically is on today, because I think the other thing that people forget is that this is an example of what has happened only over the last 30 years in this nation's history and does not ever happen in the state of Wisconsin. Up until 1980, if the fiscal year starting on October 1st started without a new budget, the feds would simply spend based on the previous budget. When they got around to passing the budget, they'd go back and you know, retroactively fund whatever needed to be funded. Then came the last Attorney General for Jimmy Carter, Benjamin Civiletti, who found something that no Attorney General ever found, which is some obscure statute that says you can't do that. And it is only the last 30 years that we've had this whole shutdown mess. We don't have that in this state. If a budget doesn't pass by July 1st of an odd-numbered year, again, they go back and fund things based on the previous budget until they get around to a budget. This is something, what you're seeing right now is something that benefits, or something that is specifically occurring because the White House wants it to happen, because both houses of Congress want it to happen, and because both parties want it to happen. Congress, at any point in the last 33 years, could have passed a law that undid Civiletti's legal opinion. Any attorney general since Civiletti could have said, no, Civiletti was wrong. This is what the law is. And we wouldn't be having this. This political game, and that is exactly what it is taking place because the politicians in Washington, regardless of party, and regardless of whether they're in the Capitol or the White House, they want this to happen.
Lewis, do you think that they want
the last 30 years?
Do you think that the president and both parties in Congress want this to happen?
No.
Let Lewis talk.
One at a time. I think the world's a little different place, and you didn't have a situation where you had such partisanship as we have today. And a lot of this goes back to the state level, is that the state legislatures draw the congressional districts. And what you've seen recently are very, very partisan districts. You have extreme conservative districts, and you have extreme liberal districts. And so the only thing a sitting congressperson has to worry about is a primary within their own party, or from the left or from the right, depending on which party you're in. And so as a result of that, you go to Washington and you don't try to lean, you know, to the middle and try to cut a deal or try to negotiate or try to work something out and actually move the ball forward. You're continually concerned about satisfying your extreme, whether it's extreme right or extreme left. So what you have here is a situation where it was under Denny Hastert, and it goes back to, the 30 years ago, whatever Steve was talking about when Jimmy Carter's attorney general promoted this, was the idea that you have to have a majority of your caucus. Sure, you want a majority of your caucus, but you don't let a small fraction of faction in your caucus drive the whole thing. And that's what's going on right now. And Boehner has Eric Cantor, the majority leader, kind of breathing down his neck, and he's been breathing down his neck as long as Boehner has been speaker. And so if Boehner slips up and doesn't satisfy them, there's somebody waiting there just ready to jump in and become speaker. So Boehner is in a terrible situation, and I don't think he knows how to get out of it. And unless Steve has, historically can tell Boehner how to do it, I can't figure out how Boehner's, and Boehner can't figure out how he's going to get out of this right now.
Yeah, so Steve, how should Boehner get out of this right now?
Well, I will tell you how he will get, or somebody will get out of it. You know, again, because, and Lewis is absolutely right, this is certainly the result of the redistricting process, whose number one priority is to keep the incumbents in office. The number two priority is to keep the incumbent party in office. This will end when whatever side makes this determination first comes to the determination that they're going to lose, that this is going to cost them. And the thing that people, you know, there's been all of this talk about, and I assume it's that the poll numbers are accurate, that people are blaming Republicans for this. That's fine. What people, I think, what the pundits, not people, pundits tend to forget is that back when this, in the most, you know, nasty example of this, the 95-96 thing occurred, everybody, you know, claimed that, well, Clinton beat the Republicans. Well, the fact is that for the next decade after that, Republicans controlled the House for almost the next decade, with the exception of that bizarre period when Jim Jeffords left the GOP and it was like a 50-49-1 shift in the Senate. Republicans controlled the Senate also. So to say that it hurt Republicans, well, they still stayed in office. And that's not one that you can, you know, you can say, well, it's redistricting, because it wasn't back in the middle 1990s. Again, this is a political game being taking place, and it is certainly taking place with big stakes for people, you know, the lives of you know, federal employees and so on. But it's going to end whenever either side first decides that this isn't benefiting them anymore, and it's going to start hurting them. Until that happens, who knows when that happens? We're going to be talking about this for maybe weeks.
Yeah. Well, and let's Lewis. What about? Do you see the Democrats or the president possibly caving and agreeing to delay the Affordable Care Act if it means, crashing through the debt ceiling?
And it would be wrong to do that.
Why?
The bill was passed, the Affordable Care Act. It was then ratified by the voters, and Romney ran against the Affordable Care Act. If he was elected, he was going to repeal it. So, in a sense, a big part of the 2012 election was, do we support and do we keep the Affordable Care Act? Obama won. The public voted. The public spoke. And you can't let a small group of extremists, maybe they can bully their speaker, but they can't bully the whole country. This is law. This will remain law for the foreseeable future. And let's say, you know, as the Republican would say, get over it and move forward. And any time that the Democrats complain about something, it's like, you know, get over it. So I think they have to kind of get over it, accept the fact that Obama not only was elected, which drove them crazy, but he got reelected. So let's move on. Let's try to move the country forward, because the rest of the world is moving forward. And if we're playing games like this, we're falling behind.
Mm-hmm. Steve?
I'm really sorry, frankly, to hear liberals say, it's the law, because, you know, slavery used to be the law in this country. Jim Crow laws were the law down south. The Vietnam War was, you know, perfectly legal. I'm sure that liberals hated the two Iraq wars in 91 and 2003, and they got passed by Congress. I think that to say, well, it's the law, is really kind of a lame rationale for it. I don't remember getting the chance to vote for or against Obamacare. I noticed that in the opinion polls, which everybody is talking about, saying that they're blaming Republicans for the shutdown, there are opinion polls that say that something like 57% of the people in this country oppose Obamacare. So I guess I don't think this election was about Obamacare specifically either. I think that if you want to talk about legitimate elections, let's talk about what might have happened with the IRS harassing and therefore forcing, you know, right-wing groups to stay quiet during the election. But to say that the election was a campaign about Obamacare is a stretch, I think. And so I think Obamacare is a bad law. I think Obamacare is a bad Supreme Court decision. It's not going to work the way it's supposed to because of all of the waivers that the Obama administration passed on to their buddies, like the unions. So it's going to go you know, it's going to list money like the Titanic immediately as soon as it takes effect. So I think the responsibility of a member of Congress is to not pass bad laws. And no Republican passed this. Republicans are now in charge in the House, and therefore, it's not just their ability, it's their responsibility to change this if they can't.
All right, Doug Lewis.
That's how the process works.
Let's go back to his first point, you know, like, quote, liberals say that's the law. Well, yeah, I think we do. We live by the rule of law, Steve. I mean, laws are okay. I mean, you might not like some of them, but I'd rather have laws than not have laws. And this polling that you're talking about, my God, I mean, you certainly know this as well as I do, that it's how you pose the question will determine a big chunk of what the results of your polls are going to come out as. So depending on how a question is posed, you know, if you take one little part of the Affordable Care Act, if you say, you know, do you like this or this and this? Do you like this house, but do you want to pay this price? Well, yeah, I like the house, but I don't want to pay this price. You can't separate one item out and poll on that and say, see, people don't like Obamacare, which is what's going on. And the thing about the IRS and the right-wing groups, I mean, come on, Steve, that was all debunked a little while ago, so don't bring back something like that. But I think the real issue is just the Affordable Care Act. Once it gets implemented, like most programs that are good, and this is good, certainly it has a lot of flaws, and certainly it needs to be cleaned up at the edges a little bit, no question about that. But anything this large is going to start out with problems, and you're going to have to kind of clean it up on the edges. But as soon as this gets implemented, as people begin to understand it, as people realize there aren't death panels that the Republicans were talking about a few years ago and things like that, people are going to like it. And this is what Ted Cruz is talking about. This is why he's so concerned. He said, we have to stop it now. Because once people get used to it, once people understand it, and once people see the benefits of it, they're not going to want to change. So right now, continue to make up stories about all the terrible things about it. Try to, you know, dissuade young people from signing up for health insurance, which is really an interesting thing because the Republicans try to talk about being so responsible. When you're encouraging people not to have insurance and they become seriously injured or seriously ill, what happens? They're either going to go to a hospital and not have insurance, and that means everybody else who goes to the hospital and pays their bill is subsidizing them, or they're going to end up on Medicaid, and the taxpayers will subsidize. So it's irresponsible, and they also, to not encourage people to get insurance, this is not a perfect bill. It's not exactly the way I would do it, but it's a step in the right direction. And what we need to do is implement it as well as possible and then begin to clean it up at the edges where the problems exist.
I need to jump in because we're past break time. We will take a lot of calls who are waiting to join the conversation as we talk about the federal government's partial shutdown and the dispute over the funding of or the delay of the Affordable Care Act. Welcome your input at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Lewis Fortas, who is editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express, and Steve Prestigard, who is a journalist and blogger at steveprestigard.com. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with two guests from different political viewpoints about the top news stories of the week. Today we are talking with Steve Prestigard and Lewis Fortas, and with you if you'd like to join at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Most of this hour, I'm sure, will be spent talking about the shutdown showdown, and we have Daryl in Exonia with us first. Hi, Daryl.
Hi. I was just thinking that I think Obama's like holding all the cards, because I think if he waits long enough, the Republican Party seems to be like, you know, a little more wealthier people that might own stock and things like that, where the Democratic Party seems to represent people that don't necessarily have big saving accounts. And I think the longer he holds out, you look at the stock market's tanking, and I think once the stock market and all these Republican bigwigs start losing money, they're going to start putting pressure on people that, hey, you're messing up. Even yesterday's paper, they had the president or the CEO of Goldman Sachs and a group of bankers met with Obama, and they were telling him how bad things could get. And it's like, I don't think any of these guys voted Democrat, but they're suddenly very interested in talking to Obama. So I think he's kind of holding all the cards, and if he waits it out, there's going to be a lot of Republicans getting very angry. That's all I got to say.
All right, so the effect on Wall Street's going to force Republicans to cave. Steve, what do you say to that?
I think the caller is mistaken as to who he thinks has the money. Bankers have given more money to Democrats than Republicans for about the last decade. And, you know, people like Nancy Pelosi are certainly not Republicans, and they're multi-bazillionaires. I think that also, you know, if you have that much money, then a savvy investor knows that you're in the stock market long term, and you're not sitting there worrying about what stock did 3 minutes, you know, what the stock prices did 3 minutes ago. So, I mean, the caller may be right as far as what happens, but I think his rationale for why it happens is not.
Lewis?
Yeah, contrary to what Steve said, Wall Street does support Republicans much more than it supports Democrats. There is certainly the high-profile Wall Street people that are supporting Democrats, but the majority of Wall Street, the money goes towards Republicans. But this is a problem for the Republican Party right now, and that is you have, if you want to call them the Wall Street Republicans or whatever, who are very much economic Republicans. I mean, these are the ones that are looking at the markets and looking at the whole free market economy. Then you have this other group, the social conservatives. And what these Wall Street folks have in common with these, conservative, rural, social conservatives, I don't know. I mean, these folks are in such different worlds. And so the Republicans are holding these two groups together. And some of the Wall Street types are defecting toward the Democrats because they just realize that, you know, they're much more like them than they are these social conservatives that, you know, ignore science, that, are, you know, very anti-abortion and, against gay folks. I mean, all that other stuff that, Wall Street has kind of gone beyond. And so I think it's just, right now, the Democrats went through this about 30 or 40 years ago when McGovern was the nominee and There were real splits in the Democratic Party, and a lot of these Democrats became Republicans. These were the Reagan Republicans and the like. Right now, the Republicans are going through this, where they have a very what appears to be something that cannot be kind of transcended. They have these two factions in the party, and something's going to happen here. People are talking about third parties, Tea Party breaking off and becoming a Libertarian Party or something. Something's going to happen, and I don't know how soon, but that's a problem for the Republicans.
Let me
know what Steve has.
Well, we have so many callers and topics. Let me get Chris in Sparta on. Hi, Chris, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing? I actually have part of it's kind of a two-part question, and I'll preface the question by saying I disagree with the privatization of government. I think that the government should ensure the health of the people and should basically take care of us and make us feel safe. That being said, and this is the first part of my question, we're cutting back non-essential jobs. What can we do to fix the budget to maybe privatize some of these non-essential jobs? Given maybe even if it's a temporary 2 or 3 year grant given by the government just to get it started so that we could privatize these jobs so that these non-essential jobs are not eliminated, but they're no longer funded by the federal government.
All right. Well, Steve, what do you think of that? If they're non-essential government employees, should they be privatized?
Well, if they're being funded by the government, it doesn't matter if they're getting their checks directly from the government or from a private contractor who is getting paid by the government. So that's kind of a distinction without too much of a difference. I think actually there is an excellent case yesterday and today, an example of what is essential and what isn't. Last night there was a report of a tornado, I believe, or a possible tornado in Dodge and Washington counties. even with the government slowdown, it's really not a shutdown. The National Weather Service still issued tornado warnings, and if, as predicted, there's severe weather today, they will still be issuing storm watches and warnings. However, at the same time, let's remember that every TV station in this state that has a news operation has their own weather operation that does their own forecast, not, you know, necessarily just passing on the National Weather Service's forecast. At the same time, you've also got the Weather Channel, weather.com, you've got AccuWeather, and you've got these other organizations that do the same thing that the feds do, except for the fact that they're not allowed to use the term, you know, tornado warning or whatever. So it would be nice, and I don't think it's possible in this kind of political atmosphere, but it would be nice to actually figure out what really is essential and what is being done in the private sector that is being done better than government does.
You know, on Fox News, they have been referring to the shutdown as a slim down, and many Republicans, including Michelle Bachmann, are saying this makes the case for a smaller government. Do you agree with that, Louis Fortas?
I think it makes the case for the opposite. I think that as people realize all the different things government does for them and how they get affected when you shut down the government, they begin to say, gee, okay, yeah, they do this and they do that. So I think it actually makes an argument for government. But back to the caller's question or whatever, I think there are certain sectors of the economy that should not be for profit, I mean, such as education. I mean, there is a more important goal there, and that is educating children. You can do it through nonprofit. It doesn't have to be government. It can be, you know, there are nonprofit, you know, colleges and that. But the you don't want education to be driven by profit maximization, because when you profit maximize, you start making decisions that are not in the best interest of the greater good. And I think with education and a number of other services, we need to keep an eye on why we're, you know, the bigger picture of, you know, our need to educate and educate as well as possible in the world economy, things like that. So I don't think necessarily going to the for-profit sphere, and I mean, I run a for-profit company, I'm a business person, but, you know, there are certain things we in the for-profit world should not be dealing with.
Let's talk about some of the things that have been shut down. Or not, against orders from the federal government, the Wisconsin DNR is refusing to close the state parks in Wisconsin that receive federal funding, which includes Devil's Lake and Kettle Moraine. So, reaction to that, Steve, first?
You know, if Scott Walker really is running for president, he just got a ton of votes by doing that sort of thing. By defying the feds, I can't imagine a better thing that a governor of a state could do. It is literally a no-lose proposition from, you know, as far as that part of it goes, from Scott Walker's perspective.
Yeah, and
it's certainly going to help his reelection campaign in next year too.
There is also some I don't know, bad PR. I'm not sure who the World War II veterans may blame, but they stepped over barriers to visit the closed World War II memorial in Washington, D.C., and that's getting a lot of press. So your reaction to that, Louis?
I applaud both of them. I mean, I think that there should be some flexibility, because everyone knows they're not closing down the government for good. And number two, we are the United States, and we the citizens of the United States of America, and we should have a right to, if they want to, you know, close the park, they can say, okay, there's not going to be anyone monitoring, you're going in at your own risk or whatever. But I applaud both of those things. I applaud the DNR, and I definitely applaud the veterans.
So Republicans are now, according to NPR News, are still attempting to fund select pieces of the government, such as national parks or cancer research, rather than sending along this so-called clean of continuing resolution to fund the federal government. That effort failed on Tuesday, but they're still trying that today. What's the point of this, Steve Prestigart?
Well, the point is to put Democrats on the record as being opposed to things like veterans funding, and by keeping keeping national monuments and national parks open is to put Democrats on record as opposing those. Is it political? Well, of course it is. But it's a good, from the political optics perspective, it's a good strategy. And from the political optics perspective, to be trying to defend closing national monuments and, you know, national memorials when there's a World War II group waiting to view is really bad.
Yeah. So why don't the Democrats accept these piecemeal things, Louis Fortas?
Because it doesn't really deal with the problem. But I agree with Steve. I mean, just look at, we're actually, you know, totally agreeing on this one. I mean, how do you not support Eric Cantor, the, you know, ultra conservative majority leader? There he was with a bunch of docs at a pediatric cancer research center, saying, "Why shouldn't we fund this?" Well, of course we should fund that, but we should be funding the whole government, not just those, you know, cherry picking these real popular things. So it's very good. It's good PR for the Republicans who, you know, have put themselves in this box, and I think that's, you know, one of the clever PR options that they have, and they're doing that well.
Let's go to Joe in Schofield. Hi, Joe.
Oh, good morning. A couple comments about the shutdown. The Hastert law, I think, is unfortunate because, you know, they're letting 30 or 40 representatives block the will of, you know, the Senate, majority of the Senate, and quite a few people in the Congress. You know, on the news today, they had Benjamin Netanyahu from Israel saying if they don't have a budget, they take 1/12 of last year's budget for the first month, then the next month they would take the next month's from last year's budget, so they go in 12 increments, but after 6 months, if they don't have a budget, they have elections, and they said they've never not had a budget after that. But, you know, the Hastert rule is, I don't know if that's, you know, constitutional or is it a law, I don't know. If your gentlemen know about that, I'd appreciate a comment on that. And
thanks very much, Joe. I'm afraid we just have time for that. Well, Louis, was it you who brought up the Hastert rule earlier?
Yeah. I mean, Denny Hastert was an Illinois Republican congressman who became speaker, and that was the rule he lived by. So it's no law. It's just his way of doing it, and it carried on.
Well, I'm going to leave it there because we need to. We do need to move on, talk about some other issues in the news this week. A lot of them are related. We will talk some about the opening of the healthcare marketplace and the exchanges on Tuesday, on the same day that the government partially shut down. And we'll welcome more of your input, too. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to The Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Steve Prestigard, journalist and blogger at steveprestigard.com, and Louis Fortas, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee, talking about the top state and national news stories of the week, as we do every week at this time. Now it's time for the Week in Review quiz. On October 1st, on the first day of the partial government shutdown, one national park was celebrating its birthday. Well, it's 123rd anniversary, but it was closed. Which park was it? 1-800-642-1234. That's the number to call if you would like to answer our Week in Review quiz question and be eligible, possibly, for one of the books that we have featured on the program this week. We'll randomly select a winner from all of the correct answers, and we'll announce the answer and the winner at the end of the program. So what national park celebrated its 123rd birthday on October 1st? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Again, just spend 5 minutes or so with this quiz question, and then we will open up our phones for more calls for our guests during this edition of the Week in Review. So, the federal government also partially shut down on October 1st, Insurance marketplaces for the Affordable Care Act opened up on Tuesday as well. These marketplaces will allow those without insurance to compare and buy health plans, but there were a number of glitches and lots of traffic that made it hard for consumers to sign up. I don't know if people are getting through even today. How much of a problem is this, Louis Fortas?
First of all, for those of us who run small businesses and have computer glitches all the time and are always calling our IT guy to come by and fix this or fix that, it's kind of heartening to know that, you know, the government, which has almost unlimited monies when it comes to something like this and putting together a program like this, has all these glitches too. So kind of evens things out a little bit. But anyway, I think the real irony of the whole deal is when you close down the government, you keep running the essential. You close down the non-essential. And who decides what's essential and not essential is the president. So in this case, the Affordable Care Act is considered essential because it needs to get started, it needs to get launched, and it's a major piece of legislation. But while the Republicans are kind of arguing among themselves and closing down the government, you have these exchanges moving forward. And I think the I think it's a good problem to have when you have too many potential customers. And I think as the days went on, they started beefing up, which I don't understand totally how to do this, but they started beefing up their capacity to sustain the amount of traffic that they were getting. And so I think you can't judge the Affordable Care Act by the computer technology that was being used, and so, which is what some of the conservative pundits are saying. But I think it has had a little rough start for a good reason. You had a lot of, for a desirable thing, you have a lot of potential customers. So I think these are trivial little blips in the screen, and no one will remember these 2 months from now.
Yeah, I think there was something like 3 million right off the bat, Steve Pressegard. A lot of people wanted to check that out.
Well, there's always early adopters or people who are just curious. I think that, people who were in, people who are covered now may have checked it out to find out what they would pay under Obamacare versus what they're, what they're getting now. And I guess I agree to the extent that you can't necessarily judge it based on whether the IT works. You can absolutely judge it based on how much it's going to cost you. And I think one thing that people are going to find out as we get closer to December 15th, which I think is the deadline for signing up, is that it's going to cost them substantially more than they think it is. And by the way, this is something that is not funded anywhere close to what it needs to even break even, thanks to the waivers. I think, as I said, I don't think that that you should judge it based on the IT, but I think the IT is a nice metaphor for the fact that government programs generally do not work the way they're supposed to. They cost more than they're supposed to, and they do less than they're supposed to. And I think in the next 2 months, we're going to all find that, or at least the people who are looking for coverage are going to all find that out.
Mm-hmm. Well, in Wisconsin, Governor Walker is contemplating changing health insurance for state employees to some self-insurance model instead of using the HMOs that that public employees like me have now. He also said that no decision will come until at least next month. They've got to look at the pros and cons of all of this. What should I be worried, do you think, Steve Prestigard?
Well, I'll tell you this much. I think that in the next month or so that the insurance companies that contract with the state are probably going to have much more favorable rates for people. This is an example of competition, or at least a threat of competition anyway. I've worked for companies that are self-insured. I've seen units of government that are self-insured. I am not a health insurance expert, so I can't say if one is, better than the other, but when you bring competition in, even, the threat of competition tends to make everybody behave better. And, if this doesn't happen at all and state employees end up with, a better insurance deal, it worked, didn't it? Even if they don't change insurance.
What's going on with this? Do you know, Louis Fortas?
I'm not an insurance expert also, but I did chair the insurance committee when I was in the state assembly. And Wisconsin had, and what you're experiencing, Joy, is what they call a kind of managed competition. So you have about five or six different choices, I assume, in October of various HMOs that you can choose from. So the competition that Steve is talking about, I think, is absolutely right. If you impose a competition, you will get better pricing. I mean, it's working very, very well, and we're kind of a national model. And so it's one of these, you know, if it's not broke, don't try to fix it things. But I wouldn't be surprised if they do change it. It will come out like what much of what Scott Walker's programs come out being, and that is, you know, there will be large corporations that will come in that will manage this. They won't have any risk, but they will manage the program. So they will make substantial money without any risk, and that's what insurance companies love. And so I would be a little nervous. I'm hoping that this that, you know, if people come to their senses. I think we have a very good system in Wisconsin, a very good system. And I hope that they just kind of leave you state employees, continue doing what you're doing.
We are talking about the news of the week. We now have some open lines if you'd like to join, and only a few more minutes to go in this edition of the Week in Review. We've been talking a lot about the partial federal government shutdown and the various implications and the political implications as well. We'll talk more about a few other state issues going on. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Talking with Louis Fortas and Steve Prestigard today. Before we finish off with and talk about a couple of unrelated state political issues, I guess I wanted both of you to briefly give me how you see this standoff, this impasse ending. You mentioned in the very beginning, Louis Fortas, that we have the debt ceiling deadline coming up, and I mean, we're going to have a partial government shutdown until then, and then what?
I think Boehner has come out very clearly saying we will not, we will raise the debt ceiling, because I think people are laying out to him, explaining to him the real ramifications of what that means. And it's serious, and it will affect the whole world economy. And so he did make that comment. So it's now between now and then, what do we do? And I think that I was listening to Charlie Dent, who's a Republican congressman from Pennsylvania, and he was saying, you know, we need to kind of move this forward. Just, you know, put it up on the floor, let everybody vote on it. And if they did any kind of clean, continuing resolution, it would pass. So I think what's going to happen is there's going to be some efforts to save face for Boehner, and eventually it'll get through. And they may, you know, to save face, they may deal something with this tax on medical devices or whatever. But I don't even think they'll get that much. I think they're going to have to bail Boehner out, because he can't seem to get himself out of this by himself.
So how do you see it wrapping up, Steve?
I think the debt ceiling, issue is probably the one that will tend to focus everybody's mind. But it may be, you know, like hours before, you know, they run into that. The thing is, and it is, I mean, to me, this is a perfect example of why government is too large, because now you've got all the career politicians who are, you know, essentially boxed in. You're asking John Boehner to do something, as far as I know, no speaker has ever been asked to do, which is to pass a budget with less than majority support in your own party. Tip O'Neill didn't have to do that. You know, Nancy Pelosi would have never, ever done that. And you're asking, you know, a politician to do something that, you know, no other politician's been asked to do before. I'm not sure why Boehner has to be considered a special case in this instance, but, you know, this being politics, and politics being about getting reelected, you have to, whatever it is, has to be something that makes everybody look good, that they can go back, see, we won, you know, that's, and whatever, I wouldn't really know where that is, but I do think that they're going to have to figure it out fast with the debt ceiling coming up.
All right, well, let's move on to a couple of other unrelated state issues. A series of hearings to discuss the Common Core education standards kicked off yesterday at the state capitol. There will be other hearings around the state. The standards, which are already being implemented in schools, are the subject of new controversy. In that, Governor Walker said they are not stringent enough, or that Wisconsin should have stronger standards than the Common Core national curriculum. Some other Republican governors also criticizing Common Core. What do you make of these hearings, Louis Fortas?
I get a kick out of the not stringent enough. This isn't like the maximum. This is the minimum. I mean, if you want it more stringent, you know, the state of Wisconsin is welcome to do it, and hopefully they should. But these are standards that, you know, educators across the country have worked on for years to put together. They're good basic standards, and we need them because you have a big kind of anti-intellectual, anti-education movement going on. You have people that are denying, you know, climate change. You have people that are denying science. If they don't like science, or if it's contradictory to some of their, you know, religious beliefs, then they deny science. I mean, this is serious. The rest of the world is moving forward, and we're dancing around, you know, dealing with issues that most people thought were kind of put to rest 100 years ago. So this is just another manifestation of kind of a right-wing anti-intellectual effort that is manifesting itself. And so hopefully we will keep the standards, and hopefully if Scott Walker thinks they're not stringent enough, make them more stringent. But that is that's the floor, not the ceiling.
All right. Very briefly, Steve, because we have one more issue we want to get in.
I'm not sure. I've heard a lot about Common Core, but I haven't heard enough to really be able to say whether it's a good thing or not. I'm not sure that, unfortunately, saying we're going to, you know, force on like three or four things at the moment, just two, math and reading, that's not the whole scope of education. And so I'm for making kids do better, or getting kids to do better in school. I'm not sure this is the way to do it.
Let me get this one last story in. We've been following it. Former Assembly Majority Leader Scott Souter is stepping away from a high-paying job in the Public Service Commission to instead take a lobbying position with the Wisconsin Paper Council. His position with the PSC was criticized widely because of his role in a grant that was later rescinded. But Governor Scott Walker says the change was not because of that. Very quickly, Louis Fortas, do you think that's true?
I think it was totally because of that.
Yeah. Steve Prestigard, your thoughts?
Well, the process worked. Greg got rescinded, and Scott Souter isn't working for the PSC, so I guess it worked after all.
All right, there we go. I want to congratulate Jim, who is our winner of the Week in Review quiz. What national park celebrated its 123rd anniversary on the same day of the federal government shutdown? Steve, you know the answer, don't you?
My kids' bedrooms.
Yosemite National Park. Which was founded on October 1st, 1890. And we will give Jim a choice of books that we featured on the program recently. Well, that'll do it because we're out of time. Louis Fortas and Steve Prestigard, thank you both very much for being with us. Thanks to Christy Taylor and to Cynthia Schuster for producing and directing this show. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.